The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to Report from Latin America. This is Mike Consul. I'm on the phone with Joseph Williams. Joseph is in São Paulo, Brazil. He is the founder and CEO of InDev Capital. He traces his roots, the roots of his international business career to his undergraduate experiences at Stanford. And when he was at Stanford, he minored in Japanese and then lived in Tokyo for 3 years, working as an engineer and business development liaison for a joint venture between Hewlett-Packard and, is it Konica? Is that how it's pronounced, Joseph, or Konica?
Which Japanese, they say Konica.
Konica.
In the U.S., it's Konica, but in Konica, exactly. Konica.
Yeah, it definitely has the Japanese panache on that pronunciation. So then after returning to the United States, according to the bio I've got here, Joseph, you earned your MBA at Harvard Business School, and then he went on to work at the investment bank DLJ, Donaldson, Lufkin, Jeanneret. So, Joseph, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for letting me participate. Appreciate it.
You bet. Now, Joseph would make the argument that it is time to give Brazil a fresh look, that things have turned around there. I want to, we'll spend some time asking Joseph a few questions about exactly what's going on in Brazil. He is stationed there and pays attention to all things Portuguese and Brazilian. So for starters, Joseph, give us just the elevator pitch as to why investors should be paying attention to Brazil at this juncture.
You know, as you look at emerging markets, they often have quite dramatic cycles. And 6-7 years ago, Brazil, you remember the Economist cover, and it was taking off at one point. And that was a time when everyone was coming into Brazil. And the currency became very overvalued to some extent. And to some extent, some of those periods were the worst time to invest in Brazil. Because emerging markets have cycles that are very, one word could be called extreme. Anyway, and then there are also periods of radical change and then periods of calm, and once the direction's chosen, then there are times to invest and take advantage of what I call the weight of time and an overhang. So let's go through why I think now's a good time. So basically, Brazil went through a very deep recession, an economic contraction of almost 7% of GNP, roughly. There's a presidential impeachment, as you probably have heard about, perhaps. Mm-hmm. The Petrobras scandal is probably one of the largest scandals in the world, definitely Brazil, but I think one of the largest scandals on earth in history. Interest rates, if I remember correctly, peaked around 14.25%. Inflation was around 10.25%. And this, it was pretty traumatic. And this level of trauma is almost unthinkable in the United States. And having living here, I mean, I was going to an American leaving party every Friday. Literally every week someone was leaving. So that was the environment in 15 and 16. Now what's happened is interest rates now are down. I think it's hit 6.75% this week, I think. Inflation is roughly around 3%, give or take. And the economy is starting to improve. You may have GDP growth of 2 to 3% this year, potentially. 1.5% to 3%, a range of that, I have to check. But even though it's improving, the great thing as an investor for a lot of the trades is there's an overhang of a recession that was one of the worst in maybe in memory and definitely the last 50 years. So basically you have an improved environment and you have lots of arbitrage opportunities based on Brazilian investor behavior, which we can cover. But I think it's kind of a situation where you can see visibility. You have gone through traumatic process and now it's coming out of it, but there's a weight of time affecting a lot of capital and a lot of asset owners. So I think that's the opportunity I see, Michael.
Well, what about in terms of prime investment opportunities in Brazil? Do you see everything through a real estate prism? Is that your wheelhouse, Joseph? Is it real estate, and that's what you're really thinking in terms of as the channel of investment right now in Brazil? Not that that would be the only thing, but Is your focus real estate, you know, only real estate, or are there some other areas?
Yeah.
It is. Okay, so let's dig down into that a little bit. What about real estate? There's always property types that are performing better or worse. Right now, what's a hot property type or two in Brazil? Or the opportunity, that's just on the cusp of busting out.
We invest our own capital as well, obviously, and we're looking at really four things that we think are interesting. All of them are based to some extent on the fact that Brazil has a high cost of capital and this kind of overhang that's happening. So let me go through them real quickly. One thing is clustered logistics, clustered regional logistics. What I mean by that is logistics that are not in São Paulo and Rio. São Paulo and Rio have a very high vacancy currently. Every investor in the world wants to be there, and everything they think it's always worth paying more for that area. What happens is investors oftentimes don't factor into how Brazilian family offices buy real estate. It's very interesting. When you leave São Paulo, you can develop to a yield of about 12%. There's limited competition. There's not a lot of quality of assets. And basically, you're able to sell the Brazilian investor. The Brazilian investor uses leverage. And this is a critically important thing to understand if you're a foreigner, is that Brazilian family offices often aren't thinking about cash-on-cash return at all. They want to buy an asset, lever it up to the point where the interest almost takes all the cash flow, and own an asset in 10 years. Now, this is a little bit more complicated, but basically that allows a person to invest that, get a BTS, a build-to-suit asset in a good region, and get a 300, 400 basis point spread. So that's something that we really like, and that takes advantage of the fact that the interest rate's now at an all-time low, and the Brazilian investor is searching for yields. So that's one trade we like a lot. We also are looking at data centers, which is not really real estate, but it's kind of electricity in a box. But we're getting very focused on that trade real quickly. That's based on the supply-demand disequilibrium because data centers are very expensive. The U.S. is a very established wheat market. Brazil does not, and therefore there have been market adaptations that make that trade very, very interesting. We like the fact that you have strong secular demand with video demand, Internet of Things, cloud computing, all that stuff that you have in the U.S., but also you have a situation where a lot of times people have the capital to invest. The tenant invested in a powered shell, basically a box, and the owner's charging per square meter and not per megawatt. So there's a lot of arbitrage there, but we like that sector. It's a complicated sector, like that sector. The other two things are based on residential real estate. Real quickly, residential restart finance was one thing we like a lot. Basically, developers whose balance sheets were crushed last cycle, demand is coming back, they have land, they have it approved, they want to launch a vertical tower, but they don't have the capital. You're able to negotiate a very, very good trade, defensible position, preferred equity, and that's a really exciting proposition because interest rates are lower now, inflation is lower now, but a lot of developers don't have cash. And then finally, what we like is the Lotto Mental business, which is a business where it's residential subdivisions, basically the same trade, but in some ways almost more unique because land or subdivisions take 4 to 5 years to approve. Those owners started off in a nice economy. A lot of the owners of the land went through a devastating period, with GNP down 7%, and now want to sell cheaply, and the city's developed where the land is, so you have clear demand and approved land. So we kind of look at these arbitrage situations. It's kind of our style, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but those are the four things that we like a lot, putting our capital in.
Now, you brushed on this earlier, the country has seen corruption at the highest levels with the conviction of former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. I probably mispronounced that, but he was popped on money laundering charges.
Popular guy.
And then, your current president, Michel Temer,
he was just
acquitted of charges of soliciting illegal campaign contributions. These are episodes that are part of a chronic pattern of political instability in Brazil. It's not unusual for a young democracy, but that's been kind of a problem for Brazil. How big an impact has that had on the business sector and investor fortunes? Obviously, business doesn't like instability, but is that kind of baked into the cake in Brazil just because of the history?
That's a great question. I mean, wow, that's a tough one to answer, but my perspective, impact makes it interesting. So let's start off with the type of investor. And I'm not, no judgment, but just let's use the term momentum. So if you're a momentum investor and kind of big picture and kind of wait for the market to be fully correct and feel good about yourself, a lot of those investors invested at the tail end of the cycle last time. And those people sometimes had some bad experiences. I have a specific case, a sad case actually, of an investor who wanted to make a play in residential. Here's an example of what happened. So the investor, I don't know what the due diligence was, but they, as opposed to doing a niche targeted residential developer, they chose to invest with a large-scale heavy construction company that had a residential component. Unfortunately, that company got involved in Lava Jato, so at the heavy construction level. And all of a sudden, they probably lost most of their money, if not all of it. Now, I'm not saying that that was the wrong thing to do. What I am saying is that what happened in Brazil as far as investors is people that got kind of enamored with these big companies that were getting cheap debt from the government, and a lot of stuff happened very, very wrongly, those people were affected extremely negatively. I think for investors who kind of, are more niche-focused or more targeted, the corruption issues or less so, but yes, I mean there was significant money loss by not checking who you were dealing with. And heavy construction around the world has challenges, but I think there was some situations where people made some bets on people that were not the right decisions. But about the corruption in Brazil, I think it probably the one good thing about the Lula and the CEO of Odebrecht and these people going to jail is starting to change the culture. So we have a newsletter we put out about corruption coming out next week. And one thing that's important to understand is that in Brazil, people had not gone to jail before this level. So I think it started to change the culture, and I think it's a good thing. I think, Lula, who's an incredibly popular person still, and mostly that's because of his really populist viewpoint. And, probably he's kind of a saint and a crook in some ways. But to make a long story short, I think him being out of the politics now, him being convicted, Temer's challenges he's had, Marcelo Odebrecht, Andrés Esteves, Ike Batista, these are huge names in Brazil. So I think the culture is changing, but yes, historically Brazil has had some challenges with corruption. I think it's changing. I think it's a positive. I'm not going to be a panacea, but it's a positive thing happening.
Okay, so hopefully things are getting better on that front. And one of the other positive things that Brazil has going for it is that, the reporting on Brazil says it was one of the last countries that got slammed by the global financial crisis and one of the first to recover. And the most recent figure I've seen on the economy says it's growing at an annualized rate of 5%. What is business and consumer confidence like right now in Brazil, Joseph? It has a direct impact on real estate when business and consumer confidence is high. What do you see there?
Wow. I mean, Brazil, as you know, I'm going to answer this as best I can. It's kind of a, I guess the right word is a bifurcated society, meaning that the difference between people that have and don't have is pretty extreme. So let's take class A and B, and those are what you would call people that can afford to fly to the United States, for example. They're quite animated. I mean, things have changed radically in that world. I mean, people are very, very excited about the interest rate reduction, very, very excited about inflation, very, very excited about the economic team that Temer has. People don't like Temer personally, but Morales, Leon, he's got some real rock stars working the economy. So in the capital markets, in the Sao Paulo, what I would call, upper middle class community, people are very, very much more animated than before. In the lower classes, it's starting, and I don't want to use a silly example, but like When inflation is at 10.25%, it affects people that are, you know, have moderate incomes or lower incomes, like tomatoes, potatoes, rice, basics. So inflation is very, very deadly, and Americans aren't really used to inflation, at least in my lifetime. Maybe a little bit, but not a lot. So that's improved their lower income lives a little bit, but it hasn't really, the job creation at the lower income level has not necessarily started, mostly because productivity growth and capital investment went really low during the recession. So, but I think that it is improving. So I would say that the upper classes are, you know, excited and getting very motivated, and the lower classes are relieved that inflation stopped and will become more motivated, but it takes longer because of the type of employment and the productivity gains that have to happen. But in general, things are better. Everyone knows things are better than they were. I mean, it was a scary time to be here in 15 and 16. I can't express to you how depressing it was. It was just like U.S. in 2009 or like 2008. It was very, very similar.
What has
people
changed?
Were leaving left and right.
What has changed since then, Joseph? Because I wanted to ask you really about... Here you have this huge economy. I believe Brazil's economy is larger than the rest of South American economies combined. Rap against Brazil has been that it has been overly reliant on commodity exports, and that makes it vulnerable to economic downturns in China, the United States, other big economies. Is the Brazilian economy diverse enough? Has it diversified? Do you see that as part of a economic strategy from the president to diversify the economy so that it's not just so heavily dependent on commodity exports?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to say I'm a professor at Stanford or Wharton or Harvard and studied international economics at the level that this question may require. But the perception of Brazil and the reality of Brazil are slightly different. But I mean by that, if you take the economy's percentage of exports, I think Brazil's like, the exports are percentage of GNP. Brazil's like maybe 12, 13%. Mexico's, I think, around 35%, maybe 38%. And Germany's obviously much higher because of the Mittelstand and capital equipment and everything else, maybe 45%. But the issue with Brazil, and this is true, is that the type of commodities it exports largely are commodities. But I think people discount the size of the national economy. So without question, China is extremely important to any country in emerging markets. But I think what you'll find in Brazil, you have a very big banking sector. You have a very big, you know, the Embraer, most jets that JetBlue uses are Embraer. You've got some very big companies, and the agriculture companies are vertically integrated, so you have processed foods that go to the United States. Not a great example, but JBS, who's under the corruption thing, is the largest food company in the world. So you have a little bit of, I guess, vertical integration and value-added products to some extent, but without question, China affects Brazil. I'm not going to state that case. And I'll argue to say that if China stopped buying U.S. treasuries, the cost of capital in the U.S. would change back. And of course, they can't because they have a surplus. But I'm saying that China's kind of a new reality for the entire world. But I do think that Brazil is, yes, dependent on China, yes, dependent on exports, but people overestimate how large exports are as a percentage of the economy.
So you live in Brazil. What is the lifestyle like in Brazil? It's supposed to be the land of the most beautiful women in the world, and it's supposed to be very, the music, the culture, the food. What's the lifestyle like in Brazil these days, Joseph?
It's good. I mean, you know, I think kind of like the U.S. right now is, and it's very sad, you have, you know, good and bad. You have, like, the U.S. has a lot of violence. You have guns and things go wrong. Brazil has its challenges, not perfect, but I love it here. I mean, I have a young family. My wife's a beautiful woman from Spain. We're immigrants. We have a lot in common. We met here. But I like it because it's a very entrepreneurial society. Sao Paulo is a great town. You have everything here. I walk to work. My clients are like, I can bike to my clients. It's everything's very concentrated, so you can have a business like mine and never have to travel. Food is fantastic. The raw material of the food is fantastic. The fruits are to die for. I actually have a hard time eating fruit when I go back to the United States. I eat berries, and that's it. I can't have bananas, I can't have mangoes, I can't have pineapple, I can't have anything that's a fruit that has in Brazil because the fruit is so much better here. And the services are quite inexpensive in general. I will say that my I have a kid that my daughter's 2.5, and I have a kid that's coming in the next days. My wife's 39 weeks pregnant. But I will say that I think, you know, education, public education is a challenge. But in general, I live a great life, and I think it would cost me at least 4x to do it in New York. And, in, you know, it's a great place. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's a very big country, so I can only speak for my world in Sao Paulo. But the people are very pleasant, they're very immigrant-friendly. You don't not having this discussion you're having in the United States about immigration and everything else. So yes. It's a nice place. I mean, no place is perfect besides immigrant Switzerland, but this is as good as I can afford. St. Moritz is way too expensive.
Our guest has been Joseph Williams. He's founder and CEO of InDev Capital, and clearly Brazil is open for business again in real estate development, according to Joseph. Joseph, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.